And thank you so much for tuning in to KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Maria Dudzak. And joining me this morning from Wish is Erica Paquette. And she is here to tell us about the Ketchikan Homelessness Assessment. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for joining me. And yes, this assessment was done. I guess tell me when did this happen and what was the purpose of this assessment?
So we did the assessment. Most of the data was collected in September and October of last year. We received funding to do the assessment through the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, City of Ketchikan COVID relief grants. We really wanted to try to capture what the current issues were and how that's being exacerbated by COVID for people that are homeless or experiencing housing insecurity.
And how is homelessness defined? Because a lot of times we think of homelessness as not having any place to stay at all, but there's degrees of, I guess, homelessness.
Yeah, so there's some different definitions. We use the federal definitions for homelessness. And just before we jump into that, the reason why WISH was involved is because we know that domestic violence is one of the leading causes of homelessness for women. So we wanted to kind of capture that as well. But the different definitions, and I'll just give a brief overview of them. The first is literally homeless. And so that's someone who is lacking a fixed, regular, adequate nighttime residence. And that includes places that aren't fit for human habitation. So, cars or, sleeping outside and stuff like that. Then there's imminent risk of homelessness. And so that's people who are really on that cusp. If one thing happens, they miss a paycheck, or they're up for eviction, they don't have another place to go, they don't have funding, they would be considered imminent risk of homelessness. So within 2 weeks, 14 days, that they would lose their housing. And they don't really have that support network to stay with a family, stay with friends, something like that. And then there's homeless under other federal statute, which is unaccompanied youth under 25, families with children who don't qualify as literally homeless, but they're experiencing kind of, they haven't had permanent housing of their own, and they're experiencing persistent instability, and that could be expected to continue for an extended period of time. And then finally, fleeing or attempting to flee domestic violence. So that's any individual or family who is fleeing or attempting to flee domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, and stalking. So those are the four federal VAWA crimes that if you get federal funding, you really focus on those ones.
What are you finding are the most common reasons for homelessness?
So what we did with this one, we were kind of looking at, okay, how many people fit the definition of chronic homelessness? How many people are kind of in and out of homelessness? And I'm just scrolling down to go to our survey, our results about that specific section. What is it? We asked people what were the most common things that happened right before they experienced homelessness. And I can't find.
I'm putting you on the spot, right?
I know. I did review and I'm like, why can I not find this specific one? I'm going to go down to my appendix because I know I have it right now. Okay. Right in there. I also, in the report, there's like tables but there's also the full results for people to look at too of the whole assessment. So I did find it now, page 19, we asked what were the things that immediately preceded and not just their most current like episode of homelessness, but any time in their life, what are the things that immediately preceded that? So it looks like here about 60%, it was job loss or a reduction in income. The next most commonly cited reason is eviction, about 36%. were, you know, struggling with drug or alcohol abuse, and 36% stated domestic violence were the most common causes. One thing that I, when I was doing, you know, I was collecting some of the surveys, and I had one day that I was collecting them, and nearly every person that I spoke with said that what had immediately preceded was that they had a death in the family, a parent, a spouse, a partner. And so we did this because we really want people to be thinking about those root causes. You know, you have a death in the family. I know lots of us, like, I lost a parent, and if I didn't have, you know, support and people to talk to and stuff like that, I mean, it can be really traumatic. So a lot of these reasons, right, are these things that happen to all of us, but without those support networks and, you know, social services to fill in and everything, it really can lead people into being, you know, homeless or chronically homeless.
So you speak about chronic homelessness, and that would be people who, for a long time, have been in a homeless situation. In your survey, did you discover people who, you know, it's more like short-term homelessness, long-term homelessness? How did that fare?
Yeah, so chronic homelessness is defined, again, by the federal government as having three or more episodes of homelessness over the past 3 years. And so when we were looking at it, data that had been previously reported from the McDowell Group, they estimated that in Ketchikan, there were approximately 10 individuals that met that criteria. For our research, and I could talk about limitations in the research if people want to know, but, and there's a section in the paper about it, but we did 55 assessments, and we had 21 people, so 38% that actually met that criteria of chronic homelessness. And, you know, 55 people was probably 50% of it, of people that were currently experiencing homelessness. So it's pretty high here. And so our, in the national average of people that are homeless that are experiencing chronic homelessness is 27%. So again, just with our sample, 38%. So 11% over the national average. And I forget what the second part of that question was.
I think we're okay with what you answered. So, and how was this survey conducted?
So we did kind of looked at other surveys. I put together a draft questionnaire, and then we went out, we talked with people who are working with individuals who have experienced homeless or are currently homeless, and just came up with what are the questions that we really want to ask. Because we wanted this to focus on, you know, the experiences of people, what are their histories, what are kind of those underlying root causes, you know, so we could get at those. So we talked with First City Homeless and PATH and kind of reviewed those. And then once it was finalized, we sent it out to other stakeholders. Then we just kind of started conducting interviews. COVID, of course, interrupted that a few times. So we would either go into First City Homeless, you know, go outside of PATH. But we got a lot of the respondents. So I have to give a shout out to Crystal Schleif. She was our WISH research assistant for this project. She put together like a Homeless Connect sort of event where we got donations of food and clothing and everything. And then we had people come to one area, and we had a bunch of volunteers kind of set up doing assessments. So almost all of them were conducted in person with the folks. And there were some limitations to that, of course. You know, privacy is a concern. If we were conducting them in First City Homeless, we were kind of separated off, but right, there's always people popping in and out. So that could have impacted, you know, how free people felt to talk about, say, maybe their history of violence if their partner was, you know, is the person who was harming them and was in there.
You mentioned you had 55 surveys completed. It seems like there are a large number of, maybe I'm wrong, but a large number of homeless people. How much of the population did that really represent?
It's kind of hard to say, but from estimates from other people, that was about 30 to 50% of individuals who have like been in town. So we did get a lot of people, right, who have been in Ketchikan a long time and stuff. And so, yeah, one of the COVID limitations, right, when we are wrapping up our data collection is when we had one of kind of the peaks. And of course, for the safety of the researchers and everything, we stopped doing in-person collection. And so our intention was to kind of go out to those, you know, encampments, people living in cars and stuff like that. And it did kind of limit that ability, but we feel like we got a pretty representative, 55 people is a decent amount for, we feel like it's pretty generalizable.
Now, what are you going to do with this information? How is this going to be used?
Yeah, so we really love community-based research, and we love to do it at WISH. And really, we do the research because we want other people and organizations to pick it up and use it in a lot of different ways. So the first thing that we really want people to do is use the data to approach discussing homelessness with like a common understanding. So there's, you know, these myths that people in Ketchikan who are experiencing homeless, oh, well, they came up here for a fishing job and they got stuck. Well, our research shows that 60% of our respondents were born in Ketchikan, Prince of Wales, Metlakatla, or lived here as children, right? So these are our community members that we are working with. So it's really great to have, yeah, that shared understanding, that shared vocabulary, and everybody approaching the issue using the same language. And then as far as like using it as an organization, so WISH can use this data. And we do focus a lot on violence and childhood adversity in the report itself, but we'll use the data to do like a WISH specific report, right, about how violence and adverse childhood experiences, like I have to find the exact number, but it showed like 50%, I think it might have even been higher, of the people experiencing homelessness were in foster care, you know, as a child. So lots of childhood adversity. So for us, right, we can use that to apply for grants and things like that. You know, making awareness campaigns, and then of course, like applying for funding, federal funding. They really want that local data that we can show is collected here. We can talk about our process. We can show that we have the capacity to track and evaluate the things that we're doing. And we created that baseline. And so it really opens it up to any organization could take this report and then turn it into a grant application that's going to bring state or federal dollars into our community to help end homelessness, right, is the eventual goal.
What are some of the things, I am guessing affordable housing, perhaps access to jobs, I mean, variety of things. What are some of the reasons that people remain homeless that perhaps something could be done to make things a little better?
Yeah, so we did ask people about, you know, what are some things that you would want in housing? Would you use housing? I think there's also this perception that people, well, you could give them an apartment and they still will, you know, want to sleep on the streets or whatever, which for some people, yeah, the housing needs to really suit the needs, especially those who are experiencing chronic homelessness, right? It needs to suit the needs of the population. So thinking about like if there was a new shelter built or something like that, right? For some people, it's going to have to allow for drinking or being in there intoxicated, right? For some people, they want it to be in town. So I just had one person that I was speaking with that shared, you know, they had been set up with an apartment out in Saxman, but it was away from their friends, their social support system. That social support system was located in town. They weren't able to get on the bus every day and go into town to see their friends. And so they felt really isolated. So the choice was, okay, well, you know, I'm going to go back out on the streets just so I can be around my friends. And then in the in the survey, we asked people kind of what are the things that are important to them. So, you know, more cash assistance, Medicaid, affordable housing was the third one that people stated, you know, food assistance programs, and then lots of people were looking for, you know, they felt a lot, most of the people I talked to and was other people too, they reported, right, like they have skills and abilities. It wasn't necessarily needing job training, but more of like job placement, like people willing to help them. And then as far as making, you know, like a more trauma-informed workplace, right? How do we work with people to alleviate some of the issues that are making them unable to go to work every day? And how do we have policies that are responsive to their needs?
Okay, well, and we are actually out of time here. We could probably go on and on. No, that's fine. Is there anything else you want to wrap up with and perhaps let people know how they can access this information if they'd like to see more about it?
Yeah, so you could email me at arika.p@wishak.org, and I can send you the report. And also we have a video where we did like a public stakeholder discussion, and also it's on the WISH website.
Okay, great.
Or if it's not, I'll put it on today. All right.
Okay, great. And we'll put those links with this interview on our website at krbd.org. Thank you very much for joining me, Erica Paquette from WISH. And again, the Ketchikan Homelessness Assessment, and more information is available to you. It's 5 minutes before 9:00.